Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. An hour of crime ahead of us. Later on, it's Dragnet from 1953. But first, an episode of Stars Over Hollywood, featuring the story When the Police Arrive, a CBS episode heard on March 1st, 1952.
This is Joan Crawford with a welcome to Stars Over Hollywood, presented by Carnation Evaporated Milk. Your host for Carnation, Art Ballinger.
Welcome to Hollywood, home and workshop of the world's most glamorous people. Each week, Stars Over Hollywood is brought to you by Carnation, the world's favorite brand of evaporated milk. And today we present transcribed When the Police Arrive, starring Joan Crawford. Ladies, when you buy milk, remember that no other kind of milk has as many uses as Carnation.
Carnation for cooking.
Carnation for coffee.
Carnation for baby feeding.
Yes, it's Carnation bringing you Stars Over Hollywood. And speaking of stars, here's Miss Joan Crawford.
Hello, Art. I'm delighted to make another appearance on Stars Over Hollywood, and especially in this particular story.
How's that, Miss Crawford?
Well, It's one of those tense dramas that I always find it a challenge to play.
Your latest picture, for instance, is Sudden Fear.
Yes. And it's the kind of a drama we used to call a thriller. In fact, it's so exciting that the first time I read the script, some friends rang my doorbell about 9 o'clock at night and I was afraid to open the door.
Well, the most reassuring thing, Miss Crawford, is that whatever type of drama you turn your talent to, we can always be sure of an excellent performance. Curtain going up. The room is a picture of comfort and serenity. Its well-appointed furnishings blend softly with the picture of velvet lawns and orderly gardens that can be enjoyed through open French doors. Here, then, is a setting to be enjoyed at leisure by the privileged class. Now, add to this scene a slender, attractive woman in her early 30s and a handsome gentleman beginning to gray at the temples. A perfect picture? Yes, except for one glaring note of discord. Sprawled across the carpet, an empty glass near her outstretched hand, is the crumpled form of an elderly lady. The man and the woman stand staring down at the body. Then the woman speaks.
Henry?
Yes?
Why don't you say something?
What is there to say?
Isn't it delightful? Look at her. Did you ever think you'd really see her this way? Henry, what do you suppose it's like to be dead?
I'm sure I don't know.
What are you going to do?
Call the police. Operator, the police department, please.
Dear Aunt Mildred. Do you want to hear something amusing, dear? I think I'm going to miss the dear soul.
Police department, I want to report an accident.
A suicide, Henry, a suicide.
Well, actually, a suicide. Mrs. Mildred Eldridge. No. I don't know exactly. 210 Manchester Heights Road. Henry Jennings. Yes, I'll be waiting.
Well?
Nothing to do now but wait, is there?
You know, I've been thinking.
Mind if I have a drink?
No. Darling, how should I act when the police arrive?
On second thought, I think I'll wait.
You know, it's very important how I act. Do you think I should cry?
That's the usual thing, isn't it?
Imagine crying about Aunt Mildred. But it really is important how I take it. If I cry, there just won't be any tears. I know it.
Then I wouldn't cry, dear.
What about laughing? There's a possibility they could mistake it for hysteria.
Florence, do you really have to do something?
But of course, darling, I just can't clam up. They wouldn't expect it. Or would they? Well, it's a thought. They'll be coming soon. And I still haven't made up my mind how I should act.
Just relax, Florence.
Henry, what if we've made a mistake?
It was too simple to make a mistake.
But we could have missed some little detail. And it's the details that count.
I took care of everything.
What shall I tell them? I don't even know what I'm to tell them.
Just answer the questions.
But I can't do that. I'd say the wrong thing. I know I would. By the way, what are you going to say, Henry?
I'm going to tell them what happened.
I'm curious. What did happen? I didn't actually see it, you know.
Aunt Mildred imagined she was a very ill woman. And just this morning, she asked me to get her the sleeping pills.
Yes, that's right.
Of course, I never suspected that she planned to take an overdose of them. But she did. Didn't she?
Yes. Yes, she did. We saw her take them,
didn't we? No, dear. We didn't see her take them. Mm-hmm.
We didn't? Well, where were we?
You were in the garden, in the summer house, when it happened. You were cutting some flowers, weren't you?
Oh. Oh, I don't want to say that, Henry. If I was in the summer house, somebody might have seen me.
Which is a nice alibi, isn't it?
Oh. Oh, yes, I see what you mean. Oh, yes, it is. How clever of you to think of it, dear.
Then you were in the summer house, weren't you?
Yes. Yes, I was. I was cutting some flowers.
Exactly.
Shouldn't they have been here by now? I know they should have been here long before this. Henry, put down that magazine. How can you read at a time like this?
Very interesting article.
Well, when are you going to finish it? I want you to talk to me.
In a moment, dear.
You used to talk to me. We'd sit for hours and talk. Whenever we went out dining, we'd talk and talk and... Now you never say anything to me.
I'm listening, dear. You can talk to me.
That's exactly what I mean. I talk to you, but all you do is answer. You never start the conversation.
I'm sorry, dear. I do the best I can.
Henry, you know something? One of the first things I want to do is wear her diamond pin. It's a kind of retribution for all the times I've asked her to let me wear it and she wouldn't. But it's all right now, though, isn't it?
I suppose so, in a few days.
I wonder what else she has hidden away. You know something? We don't even know how wealthy she is. She could be worth millions, and we don't even know about it.
I know how much she's worth.
You do? But why haven't you told me? How much is she worth?
About 1.25 million.
1.25 million? That much? Why, darling, we're millionaires.
Are we?
Millionaires. Think of it. Oh, Henry. Darling, everything is suddenly opening up for us all at once. All the plans we made. That trip to Paris. I've wanted to go to Paris ever since I can remember. And now we can go, can't we?
I suppose so.
When? Next month? It will be October and so crisp and lovely. We'll book passage on the Queen Mary. And I want to wear her diamond pin with a beautiful new evening gown and dance after dinner. Just dance and dance. It's been so long since we've laughed and danced together. Henry, how long has it been? It seems years and years. Have you ever thought about something?
About what, dear?
Well, here we are, just this side of middle age, and what sort of fun have we had? We haven't had any. Not really. We've just been waiting. For years we've been waiting. Waiting for her to die. Waiting to get rich. Waiting out our lives. Henry, I just thought of something extremely funny. You know how we've been waiting all these years. Well, do you realize what we're doing now? We're waiting. Waiting for the police to arrive. Waiting for them to take us away. Henry, we've made a terrible mistake. They'll know we did it. Oh, why don't they come? Why don't they come on?
Here, Florence, drink this. Drink it. You're getting all upset over nothing, dear. Oh, that's better.
I'm so sorry. It was very silly of me.
It's all right. It's all right. I understand.
Oh, you can be so comforting. You can really be affectionate when you try.
Yes, dear.
Henry, do you know how I've decided I'm going to act when they arrive? I'm not going to say anything. I won't say a word. If they ask questions, I'll pretend I don't hear them. They'll think it's shock, won't they? Don't you think that's the best way?
I wouldn't worry about it one way or the other.
Oh, Henry, why are you always such a wet blanket?
Am I?
Yes, and you know it.
Well, I'm sorry.
I think you do it maliciously.
I'm not aware of it, dear.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be cross, but it... Well, it's like getting up to a certain point and finding there isn't any place to go. It's very frustrating.
I imagine it would be.
Henry, darling, what are you doing over there?
Nothing, dear.
Please. Please come over here and talk to me. If I'm irritable, it's because I'm frightened. I know I shouldn't be, but I am.
In a moment, dear.
Henry, have you ever had the feeling that this has all happened somewhere before? I just had that sensation. It's almost as if I were a thing apart and could see everything that is happening now. I could see you standing over there by the window, and I could see me here, frightened and alone. That's an omen! It's as if Aunt Mildred were alive. And we're dead. I'm dead. And you're dead too, Henry. We're dead. Isn't it funny? Oh. And what a pity. We were so methodical.
Florence.
We're dead, Henry. Oh, you haven't realized it yet, but I have, I know.
Florence.
Somewhere you forgot a little detail. Oh, you don't know what it is, but they will. And they're going to take us away.
You're wrong, dear.
Why do you keep saying I'm wrong?
Because they're not coming.
What do you mean they're not coming?
I didn't call the police, Florence.
But you did call them. I saw you call them.
But I didn't. I only pretended to call them.
Pretended to call them? But why? Why did you
the
do
detail.
That to me?
I forgot a little detail.
Oh. Oh, thank heavens. It was intuitional, remember? I reminded you of it, didn't I?
Yes, you reminded me of it. I have you to thank for that, dear.
Yes, well, don't keep me waiting. Tell me what it was.
The detail?
Yes, what was it?
You, Florence.
Yes. I thought so. I've been a drag on you, haven't I?
Not always, but you are now.
You know something? You've been a drag on me, too. The whole thing has been wrong. All wrong for years, hasn't it? And now you stand before me with a gun. And I feel perfectly calm.
It's the shock.
I'm glad you're going to use a gun. It'll be very quick that way. When did you decide?
A few minutes ago. I had the idea earlier, but I thought I'd wait and see.
Henry, why haven't we ever understood each other? Oh, I used to try so desperately to get through to you.
We just never had the spark, I guess.
But you did love me, didn't you, once?
Yes, very much.
Then tell me what happened.
I don't know.
Oh, I wish we'd never had anything. Anything at all. Then at least we'd have had each other.
It wasn't the money.
It was always the money. It had breakfast with us every morning. It slept in our thoughts at night. Well, you'll have it now. But what about the police? What will you tell them now?
I'll think of something.
Of course, you could tell them that I was the one who poisoned Aunt Mildred and then tried to shoot you, and then you tried to get the gun away from me, and I shot myself.
It's plausible.
Do me a favor.
if I can.
Kiss me.
It's not easy to kiss a person one moment, then shoot her the next.
You mean you're not equal to it?
That's not the point. It's just too incongruous. You think I'm not going to do it, don't you?
No, I was thinking of something else entirely.
Goodbye, Florence.
Au revoir, Henry. Are you all through with your foolishness now, Henry?
But you're still...
alive. There were only blanks in the gun, darling.
Blanks?
But I might as well warn you that the bullets in this gun are real.
You mean you had this plan?
Well in advance, dear. You don't think I really would have died so magnanimously, do you?
What are you going to do now?
I'll play around with you a little bit, and then I'll shoot you. Turn about, you know. In case you're curious, I simply included your plan in my own. That is, except the little details. I didn't bother about them. It isn't every woman, you know, who has the opportunity of being shot by her husband and lives to do something about it.
When did you put the blanks in the gun?
This afternoon. Remember? When I came in from the summer house and you were telling me what happened.
Which all goes to prove men never know what they're married to.
And serves them right.
When did the masquerade begin?
Oh, years ago. You wouldn't even remember. Your mind was off somewhere foundering in money. And I just drifted off to myself, and that's where I've been ever since. One cozy little monologue after another.
What are you going to do?
Call the police. I think it's about time they arrived, don't you?
Florence, in the name of heaven, you don't know what you're doing. We can still get out of this.
We, Henry? I wasn't aware that you were to be included. Police department, please.
Florence, you're throwing away our
lives. Don't be ridiculous, Henry. We've never had any lives. Remember what I said about being dead? Desk sergeant, please. Henry, I think you're getting nervous. Calm down, dear. Desk sergeant. Mrs. Florence Jennings speaking. There's been a very tragic accident at 210 Manchester Heights Road. Could you send out a patrol car and an ambulance right away? Thank you.
Well, up to now, I'll have to give you credit for being pretty clever, Florence. But calling the police was a stupid thing to do.
It's just like you to think so. You still don't understand, do you?
Understand what?
That I'm going to shoot you.
Oh, nonsense. You couldn't kill a fly.
But I can you. And I've got excellent reasons. Come closer, dear. Don't back away. I just want to look at you. You've grown fat with the years. The idleness, that's what did it. Tell me, have the years been kind to me?
You're still very beautiful, if that's what you mean.
As beautiful as when I married you?
Woman's vanity.
I have a gun, you know. Talk, Henry.
No. And what a silly thing to ask.
But with the money and the property, I might be able to pick up another husband someplace, mightn't I?
Darling, will you please drop the dramatics?
Why?
Because I want to kiss you.
Why?
Because I love you.
You love me because you're afraid of the gun in my hand.
That has nothing to do with
it. You were perfectly willing to kill me, remember?
I must have been mad. Let me kiss you just once more.
Stay back, Henry. I warn you.
I know. You're going to shoot me.
You're trying to play on my emotions. It's cowardly.
Yes, it is.
You're attractive to me, and you know it.
Yes, I know it.
But it's not enough.
Give me that gun, Paul.
No!
Well, congratulations.
You didn't leave me, did you, darling?
It's all right. Help me.
Oh, of course. Here, into this chair. There you are.
Oh, darling, I'm so sorry I had to do it. But there was no other way.
Why?
Well, I kept hoping you'd change. Only a while ago I thought, now that Aunt Mildred's dead, the thing that's been between us and happiness, all these years, I thought that suddenly you'd wake up. I thought you might take me in your arms and tell me to be very brave. And, oh, my darling, it would have been worth all those years.
Florence, I'm sorry I missed your expectations.
It wasn't your fault, really. It was just the way things came out, that's all.
As you said, all those years, waiting for her to die. And we had so much more waiting in each other. I never knew it.
I knew it, Henry. But I could never seem to get through to you. You wouldn't talk to me.
Well, it's over now.
Yes, it's over. And the funny part is that coincidence stepped in with a final jest.
What do you mean?
Aunt Mildred had a heart attack. She called to me in the garden. The pills were never used. You see, she died naturally.
That's a good one. That's very good.
I'll remember you to Paris, Henry. To every leaf and street of it. And to the Queen Mary. And dancing after dinner. And as for you, Aunt Mildred, you will pay the final tribute. There! I'll wear the diamond pin. See how it sparkles. Isn't it beautiful, Henry? Like stars. Oh, all those years. And now, sleep, Henry. I still haven't made up my mind how I should act when the police arrive. That must be they now. It really is important, you know. It's always important to a woman how she acts. Maybe I should cry. A love. Oh, I know. Now I know.
And so the curtain comes down on the final act of this week's Stars Over Hollywood show, as presented by Carnation Evaporated Milk and starring Joan Crawford. In just a moment, we'll have news about next week's show. Meantime, how about a curtain call, Miss Crawford?
Certainly, Art. You know, as I recall, the last time I appeared on Stars Over Hollywood, after the show, you treated me to a delicious cup of coffee. Is it still the custom?
It sure is, Miss Crawford. Your cup is ready and waiting for you. And you'll find it tastes extra good, too. In fact, there's extra satisfaction from coffee within reach of everyone whose cream pitcher is filled with Carnation Evaporated Milk.
It does make a difference, doesn't it?
I'll say it does. Coffee creamed with Carnation tastes richer, smoother, more full-bodied. Carnation has the consistency of good, rich cream. It's heavy enough to whip. And believe me, what that does for coffee is something every coffee drinker ought to know about. Why, millions of coffee lovers actually like Carnation better than cream for their coffee. And yet, Carnation costs less than half as much as cream. So can you blame us for saying, no matter how good coffee is, it not only pays, but it's better when you cream it with Carnation. And Joan Crawford, for your excellent performance today, we want you to have this bouquet of red and white carnations, just like those pictured on every can of carnation evaporated milk.
Thank you, Art. The flowers are beautiful, and you've been a grand host. Now tell me, what's your show about?
On next week's Stars of Hollywood, we'll have Dan Duryea. He'll appear in a highly dramatic story.
Well, I'll be listening, Art. And now goodbye and good luck.
Goodbye, Miss Crawford. The story on today's Stars of Hollywood was written by William Paget. Supporting Miss Crawford was Ted Osborne. Special music was composed and conducted by Rex Corey. And now for the Carnation Company and Stars of Hollywood, this is Art Ballinger suggesting that you be sure to listen next Saturday for Dan Duryea. And be sure to see the George Burns and Gracie Allen television show brought to you by Carnation Evaporated Milk. Stay tuned now for Grand Central Station, which follows immediately over most of these stations. Answer the call of the 1952 Red Cross Fund campaign. Make your contribution a generous one. Stars Over Hollywood comes to you from our Hollywood studios and is heard in Canada over the Dominion Network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Stars Over Hollywood, on Tune to Yesterday from the 1st of March, 1952 on CBS. You are listening to An Hour of Crime on Tune to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of Dragnet, which was seen on television 3 years after this broadcast. On November 22nd, 1956, it's the story The Big Odd, and was first heard on NBC, and we'll be hearing an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast from December 1st, 1953.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. A gang of truck hijackers has been working in your city. They've stolen 14 loaded trucks. They've kidnapped and beaten one of the drivers. There's no clue to their identity. Your job? Get them.
It was Wednesday, June 4th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We were on our way out from the office, and it was 9:47 a.m. when we got to the county hospital. Ward 419.
Hi.
Mr. Gilmore?
Yeah. I know you guys.
No, sir. We're police officers. This is my partner, Frank Smith. My name's Friday.
I do, sir. Hello. A couple of stools over there. Drag them up. Sit down.
I'll get them. Here you go.
Thanks. How do you feel, Mr. Gilmore?
Rough. Real rough. Feel like I've ridden 50 miles in the back of a ready-mixed cement truck. Weren't for the pills they'd be giving me, I think I'd go off my rocker.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell us what happened?
Yeah, as much as I can remember. Only goes so far, then there's a room full of black.
If you'll tell us what you can, please.
Yeah. Yesterday, that's when it was.
Yes, sir.
Yesterday morning. I checked in for work. Had a load I was going to take over to Phoenix. Supposed to shove off about 10:15.
Did you know what you were carrying?
Yeah. I saw the waybill. Some of the stuff they were loading. Used furniture. Didn't make any difference to me. They load the truck and I'll drive it.
Uh-huh.
I went across the street. Little coffee place over there. Got my vacuum bottle filled and came back. By that time, they had the truck loaded. I signed the waybill in the office and went out and got into the truck. The two guys were waiting for me.
They were in the cab of the truck, huh?
Yeah, sitting there, kind of scrunched down so you couldn't even see them from the outside.
Yes, sir.
As soon as I opened the door, one of them had a gun pointed at me. Told me to get into the truck like there was nothing wrong. Just start the motor and get the truck away from me.
Did they get out of the truck at that time?
No, they were waiting for me when I got there. They told me to drive away, and I did. Wasn't going to mess around with them having a gun.
Yeah, go ahead.
And we drove about 3 blocks, and he told me to pull into an alley just off of Santa Fe.
Santa Fe and what, do you remember?
By Porter Street, between Porter and Enterprise.
I see. Like to go ahead?
Then they told me to pull into the alley, and when I did, they made me get out of the truck, took me around back and broke the seal and told me to get inside.
And that's what you did?
Officer, if they'd have told me to jump off the city hall, I'd have gone ahead and done it with that gun pointed at me. Now I'm a coward. Fellow waves a gun around, and I'm going to do just like he tells me.
Yes, sir.
Those guys are mean, you could tell.
How's that?
Oh, I'm a kind of a student of phrenology. I could tell about those fellows real plain.
Student of what?
Phrenology. You know, bumps on the head.
Oh.
They all mean something. Of course, I didn't get a chance to make a good examination of these guys, but I could see it. Real criminal heads. Mumps told me so. One fellow had a head that was one of the worst I'd ever seen.
Yes, sir.
He was mean to his mother, I could tell. Had a bump right here. Here, you see?
Oh. Yeah.
Mean to his mother.
Yes, sir. Well, what happened after they tied you up?
Just left me there.
I see. You want to go on?
Yeah. They must have drove for about 20 minutes when they stopped. Pulled in some sort of a driveway.
I figure that.
Well, right after they stopped, they made a half U-turn, then backed up. Backed up this ramp. Steep. Then they stopped and took me out of the truck. Blindfolded me and made me get out of the truck.
Now, this place where they stopped, that's where they unloaded the furniture, did they?
Yeah. Must have taken it out of there. I heard them thumping around in the truck. Sounded like they were unloading it.
Well, now, what'd they do after they got all the furniture out?
Put me back in, drove out to where you found the truck. After they both climbed into the back, beat me up. Don't remember much after that.
Mm-hmm. Both of them worked you over, huh?
Yeah. Both of them got in their licks. Especially the one who was mean to his mother. He was vicious. He was mean. They kept hitting me with their fists until I just passed out. Don't remember anything after that till I came to in the back of the truck. And that's when I called the cops and the guys in uniform came out. I guess they're the ones who called you.
Yes, sir.
Now, is there any way that you might be able to tell us where they took you?
You mean when they unloaded the furniture?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think maybe I got an idea. I tried to figure out how fast they was driving. And after you've been a driver for a while, you get to know. I'd say they were going about 20 miles an hour. We were still in town. My own guess is that they went out of Alameda. Must have gone out Santa Fe and then turned on to Alameda.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing kids yelling. That'd probably be Santa Fe High School.
Yeah.
I guess we went out Alameda to maybe 43rd or 44th and they turned right. Kind of hard to figure it then. The truck got tied up in traffic. It was hard to tell if they were stopping for that or they were just at a light. You know.
Uh-huh.
But I'd say that they went out to about Avalon. You know. Maybe they went up to San Pedro? I don't think so. I'd say Avalon. Then they turned left and headed for Hawthorne. Not sure how far they went, but I'd figure maybe around Rosecrans, and then they turned a couple more times and they stopped and drove up that steep ramp.
Mm-hmm. Now, you figure they ended up around Rosecrans and Avalon. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Guess that's not much help, though, huh?
Well, it gives us an idea where to start looking.
A couple other things that might help you.
What's that?
Well, it seems that when we started to back up the ramp, I heard a bump, like they backed into a car. They didn't hit it hard, but I bet they did hit a car.
Yeah.
After that, they pulled the truck forward and stopped and backed up again. This time they scraped into the side of a house. I could feel it run along the side of the truck. Sounded like they might have torn up some of the wood on the house.
Yeah.
Will that help any?
Yes, sir. We'll have our crime lab check the truck and see if they can come up with anything.
Sure hope you can. Oh, you talked to my boss yet?
No, sir, but he's been notified, we understand.
I bet he's plenty sore about it.
Well, we wouldn't know about that, but he should understand that it wasn't your fault.
He should, but he won't. I know.
That right?
Yeah. He doesn't understand anything that doesn't go on his way. Spotted a mile off.
What's that, sir?
His head. All kinds of bumps.
Ten o'6 a.m. We continued to question the victim, Russell Gilmore. He gave us descriptions of the two men who kidnapped him. He also told us that at one time he heard one of the men call the other by the name Leo. Further, he told us that when the two bandits had taken him from the truck, they placed him in a garage. He was able to feel the wall, and he said that he was sure it was a plaster wall, in as much as he could feel the studs and the wire holding the plaster. He said that at one time, he heard a woman come out of a house and say something to the thieves while they unloaded the truck. He told us that the garage wasn't very large because there was no echo on the sounds that were made in the building. We called the office and got out a supplementary broadcast on the thieves carrying their descriptions. 10:40 a.m. Frank and I left the county hospital and drove over to Central Station. We went up to the crime lab and talked to Ray Pinker.
On the right rear fender, we found evidence that the truck had hit a car. Lifted some paint chips. Got them here.
Uh-huh. Looks like a blue car, huh?
Yeah. I checked the paint with a Ditzer Production color book. Here, I'll show you. Got all the paints cataloged by color.
Uh-huh.
Here. This is the one.
Yeah, but Ray, there are a lot of blues there. How can you be sure this is it?
Well, here. You see, they got a color patch on each page in the book. Hole in the patch.
Oh, this little hole here, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, we just put this chip we lifted from the truck in the hole. Now, lay it down. Get this lamp. There. Color matches. Get them the same light, and you can see they're the same paint.
Huh. Look at that, Joe. Same.
Yeah, I see. Well, what do we got out of it, Ray?
The car the truck hit was a 1953 Hudson Jet. It was a single-tone car. You know, the top color matches the body color.
Yeah.
They only use this on one-color cars unless you got a special order.
Mm-hmm. Did you find any house paint on the side of the truck, Ray?
Yeah. Over here. Might be able to do a little better on that for you.
Mm-hmm.
The house the truck ran into is about 36 years old. Might be a little more than that, but it's right around there.
How could you come up with that?
Been painted 18 times. Figure once every 2 years, you come out with 36.
Yeah. Well, how do we know it's been painted every 2 years?
We don't, Frank. Just guessing. But the layers of paint are pretty even. Might indicate they did it regularly. You know, didn't let the paint go too far before they redid it.
Oh, yeah.
Here are the chips of the house paint. Here, I'll put one of them under the microscope. Here, take a look, Joe.
Okay.
You see okay?
I haven't got a... I'll adjust it. Yeah. I see what you mean.
Now, you notice the first coat was a cream white.
Mm-hmm.
And they stuck pretty much to that for the next half dozen paint jobs. Then they changed to a barn red. Then to a green, then back to cream white. And that goes on for three layers, and then to the blue that's on it now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ray, if we find the house, can you tell us if it's the same one?
Shouldn't be too hard. Aren't many of them around.
Well, how many?
Well, 18 coats would be 18 factorial. That's multiplying 18 times 17 times 16 times 15, so on to times 1. I got it worked out for you.
I hope you have. I'm here. Not with you at all. Here.
Well, look. Works out to 1 in 6,402,373,705,728,000 chances of finding its twin.
Oh. That's pretty long odds.
Well, if every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth owned 10 houses apiece, there wouldn't be another one like it.
A.M. We put in a call to Leighton Prince. Harlan Stahl told us that his crew had gone over the truck thoroughly, but had failed to come up with anything. We contacted the stats office and asked them to make a run on the M.O. that the thieves had used. They told us that the results would be ready for us late in the afternoon. We contacted hit-and-run detail, but there'd been no reports that could have been the car that the truck had hit. We went to the office and got a large map of the city. Then we drove out to the county hospital to talk to the victim again. We asked him to trace his movements while he'd been held prisoner in the back of the truck. He drew a line down Santa Fe Avenue, up to Alameda, then over to Avalon Boulevard on 43rd Street. From there, he traced the streets down to Rosecrans Avenue. He drew a circle on the map centered on the intersection of Rosecrans Avenue and Avalon Boulevard. He told us that we'd find the house we were looking for inside the circle. Before we left him, we made arrangements for the mugshots to be taken to the hospital for him to check for a possible identification of the suspect. 12:40 p.m., we contacted Records and Identification Division and asked them if they'd had any luck on running the name Leo. We were told that they had three possibles for us. The addresses on the packages were not in the area that had been circled by the victim, Russell Gilmore. We got in touch with Lieutenant Jack Smyers and filled him in on the developments. He called Metro Division and made arrangements for three additional teams of men to work with us in a search of the streets within the circle drawn by the victim. He also contacted the divisional commanders and asked for their cooperation. The men were instructed to find a residence with a steep driveway leading to a detached garage. The house would have a wooden porch on the right side of the house as it faced the street. It would be damaged to the wood on the porch. Also, there was a possibility that a Hudson automobile would be parked either in the driveway or on the street right next to it. The car would have some damage done to it. 5:15 p.m. Frank and I got back to the office from the search area.
Man, I'm sure tired.
Well, I'm with you. A lot of streets out there.
Yeah, a lot of houses on the streets. I wonder how the guys from Metro are doing.
I don't know. I'll get it. Robbery Friday. Yep. Mm-hmm. Wait just a minute. Let me get there. Okay. Hang on to it. We'll be right out. Right. Well, the Metro boys did some good.
Huh?
The house. They found it. The address given us on the phone was 1486 Cedar Street down in Compton. It took us 35 minutes to get out there from the city hall. The officers from Metro Division Reserve stood by until we got there. We found the house located on Cedar between Dwight Street and Tawada Avenue. It was a one-story frame building with a stucco garage in the rear of the lot. On the left front side of the house was a wooden porch which had been scraped by some large object. Several of the pickets in the railing were broken. On the street in front of the house next door, we found a 1953 Hudson Jet painted a light blue. There was a dent in the left rear fender. We couldn't tell for certain, but the color of the car and the color of the paint on the porch seemed to match the chips that we'd seen in the crime lab. While the officers from Metro covered the rear of the building, Frank and I rang the front doorbell. There was no answer. We checked the garage, but we found nothing that would tie the house owners in with the robbery kidnapping. The interior walls of the garage were rough wooden studs. Between them, we could see chicken wire embedded in plaster. The physical description of the house, the ramp leading to the garage itself, and the car parked on the street matched in every detail the picture that we'd been given by the victim. 6:10 p.m., we got the name Conrad Lewis from the mailbox in front of the house, and while the officers from Metro checked it with our office, Frank and I went next door to talk with the neighbors.
Yeah?
Wonder if we could talk to you, ma'am.
Sure. Who are you?
Well, it might be better if we got in off the porch.
You ain't coming in here unless I know who and what you are.
We're police officers.
Oh?
Yes, ma'am. Here's our identification.
Oh, yeah. Well, come on in.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm Myrtle Richards.
This is my partner, Sergeant Friday. I'm Frank Smith.
Oh, how do you do?
How are you, ma'am?
You just sit down. I'll turn off the television.
Thank you.
Comedy. I've seen it before a couple of times. I always laugh at them again, though. They're funny.
Yes, ma'am.
It's a great boon to the people, television. This one's only 12-inch, but I think maybe next year I'll get a bigger one, maybe even color. They got it now, you know. It's true color. It's beautiful.
Yes, ma'am.
Of course, I ain't actually seen it myself. I just read about it, you know. Beautiful. Oh, I'm a great fan. I got it on all day, right from the early show to the late, late show. I understand next week one of them stations is going to start an early, early show. Now, that'll be nice, won't it?
Yes, ma'am, sure. I wonder if we could ask you a few questions.
Why, certainly. You just go right ahead.
That car out front, does that belong to you?
The blue one?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, that's mine. I just got it a few months ago. That's what you're here about, huh?
I beg your pardon?
About how somebody hit my car. Big dent. Isn't that what you're here for?
No, not exactly. Do you know who hit your car?
No. I wish I did. If I knew, I'd sue them. Imagine hitting a car that's parked right at the curb and not leaving a note or something to say who did it. The person that ran into me must be insured. Wouldn't cost him nothing. All he had to do was leave a card.
Yes, ma'am. When was the automobile hit?
Yesterday morning. I walked down to the market to do some shopping and get some things for dinner. Pretzels, potato chips, things to eat while I watched the TV. When I got back, the dent was there. Did it while I was gone. Did it and didn't even leave a card.
Yes, ma'am. Could you tell us who lives next door to you, please?
Which side?
The left side over there.
Well, that's Lewis's house. Why are you asking about them?
How long have they lived there, do you know?
Yeah, I guess it's been about 10 years. They moved in right after Conrad. That's Mr. Lewis, right after he opened up the new store.
What line of business is he in?
Well, he got some kind of a shipping business. Has deals with different stores all over the state.
Did you see Mr. Lewis yesterday?
Yes. Matter of fact, I did. He come over like usual at 5:30.
He usually come over at that time, does he?
Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, yeah. You see, there's a TV show he likes to see. I watch it, but his wife don't care for it. She watches something else, so Conrad comes over here. He was here last night.
You see him during the day at all?
No, I didn't.
You know where they are tonight?
I'm not sure, but I think they went to the movies. Seems to me Mrs. Lewis said that her and Conrad was going to a show over in town.
That's probably for us. I'll get him.
I imagine so. Isn't anybody come calling on me this time of night?
Oh, it's Henderson, Joe. I'll be right back.
Right. Have you noticed any trucks in the neighborhood lately, Mrs. Richards?
Oh, well, I'll have to think about that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You don't mean like the garbage you can truck, do you?
No, ma'am. Large moving vans.
See the others quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, now let me see. Well, there were some people who just moved into a new house down the street. That was about a month ago. That didn't help?
Well, thank you, Mrs. Richards.
Joe, see you in a minute.
Yeah. Excuse me, please, Mrs. Richards.
Yeah, you go right ahead.
Yeah.
Henderson ran the name Conrad Lewis through the files.
Mm-hmm.
He's been convicted for armed robbery.
The record showed that Conrad Lewis had been arrested for suspicion of armed robbery 10 years before. He'd been brought to trial, convicted, and sent to San Quentin. He'd served 6 years, and then he'd been released. He was not on parole at the time. Frank and I parked our car down the street from Lewis's house, and we waited for him to return. At 10:57 p.m., we saw a dark-colored Lincoln sedan turn onto the street and swing into the driveway of the Lewis residence. A man and a woman got out of the car and entered the house. Frank and I waited a few minutes, and then we walked up to the front door and rang the bell.
Yeah?
You Conrad Lewis?
Yeah, that's right. Who are you?
Police officers. Like to talk to you.
Sure. Come on in. What's this all about? Something wrong?
You own a truck?
Hmm?
Hmm?
A truck. Do you own one?
No. You mind telling me what this is all about?
Can you account for your time since Monday night?
Why?
Can you?
Look, I don't know what this is all about, and I'm not going to tell you a thing until you let me know what you want. Now, what do you want?
The answers to those two questions.
A.M. It had been only a little over 48 hours since Russell Gilmore had been kidnapped and beaten, and we had a suspect in custody. However, Lewis refused to admit any complicity in the crime. We talked to him for several hours, but he told us nothing. He admitted that he'd been arrested before and that he'd served time in San Quentin. However, he stuck to his statement that since his release, he'd done his best to live by the law. With the evidence at hand, he was booked at the main jail on a charge of suspicion of violation of Section 211 PC. We obtained the keys to his place of business, and Frank and I went out to check it. It was a large wholesale store selling used furniture. A search of the premises failed to turn up any of the stolen merchandise. While Frank went through the stock rooms, I checked the business ledgers.
Nothing back there either, Joe. How'd you do?
Well, according to these, Lewis does a big shipping business.
That's what the woman next door told us.
He's been making shipments up to Oakland regular.
Books tell what they were?
Yeah, right here. He's been sending large lots of used stuff to a place on MacArthur Boulevard. There's a whole list of it here. Tables, living room sets, TV sets.
Better get in touch with the police up there and have them check this place out, huh?
Yeah. Without that stolen property, we're not going to have a very good case against him.
You got the address of the place up north?
Yeah. Let's go back to the office and get a call in.
Right. Sure hope they come up with the answers.
Well, if they don't, we might be in trouble.
Yeah?
The DA's office is liable to throw the whole thing out. Thursday, June 5th, 8:20 a.m. We put in a call to Captain of Inspectors Tony Bolger in Oakland and asked him to check on the recipient of the furniture shipment from Lewis. We also gave him as detailed a description of the stolen merchandise as we were able to obtain. In the meantime, Lewis had been admitted to bail and was released. Thursday, 11:15 p.m., Frank and I got back to the office from checking a lead on one of the suspects who'd driven the truck. I got it. Robbery Friday. Yeah. Yes, it is. All right. Tony Bolger from Oakland.
Let's hope we called it.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony. Yeah? Well, what'd he say? Well, that's the way it looked from here. What? Yeah, right. Okay, thank you.
How about it?
Let me talk to the man who bought this stuff. He's clean.
How about the merchandise itself?
It's all stolen. p.m. We got in touch with Lieutenant Smyers and filled him in on the new developments. After we talked to him, we contacted officers Max Herman and Ed Benson and made arrangements to meet them at the house on Cedar Street. It took us less than half an hour to get out to Compton. The other officers were there by the time we arrived. While they covered the back door, Frank and I went up to the front.
You think he knows it's us?
I don't know. Try it again. The car's in the driveway. We know he's in there.
Wait a minute. Sounds like somebody's coming now. Yeah?
What are you doing out here? Aren't you guys ever going to get off my back?
Mind if we come in and talk?
I got a choice?
No, you haven't.
Well, then come on in. You want to go through the house again?
That won't be necessary.
Yeah. I'm glad of that. What's it about this time?
Same as before.
Maybe you better spell it for me.
We can go that route if that's the way you want it.
Go ahead. I like fairy tales.
All right. We got a report from a victim who was robbed and kidnapped. He was able to give us a description of this house, of your garage, and of the whole setup.
You've been on a spike again. You see him.
We took a sample of the paint from your front porch. It matches paint found on a truck that was hijacked. A
lot of houses in L.A.
Not painted like this one.
You think you're going to send me to the joint with a batch of paint?
It's going
to
help.
Look, cop, you know I've been the rounds. I've seen enough trouble to know it's rough to get a conviction with circumstantial evidence. That's all you got with me. Nothing more. Now, why don't you go home and I'll just forget you were here tonight?
We got the plant.
What?
We got the plant. They moved in on it.
The man you sold the stolen furniture to is willing to testify.
You know we got you cold. Now, why not cop out?
That's the way it hangs, huh?
That's the way.
All right, I'll get my coat and go
just
with you.
Just point it out. We'll get it for you.
In the closet.
Never mind.
He's making a point of it.
Outside. He's in his car. Yeah, come on. He's heading down toward Rosecrans. Better hit the siren.
Right.
He's turning onto Rosecrans. Take a left.
I got him.
See him?
Wait a minute. Yeah, up ahead there. Try a shot?
Better not. Too many people around. Can't you close in on him?
I think we're pulling up.
Making a turn.
Yeah.
Stay with him.
Hang on.
It's a
Frank. Yeah. He's in trouble, Joe.
Come on.
Yeah.
Well, let's get him out of there.
Yeah. Hey, that door's stuck.
Wait a minute, I'll give you a hand.
There.
Can you get him?
Better call an ambulance. The motor's in his lap.
Still alive?
Looks like it. Can you help me here?
Yeah, let me get in there.
All right. Come on, let's put him down here.
Yeah. All right, take it easy, Lewis.
I'll call the ambulance.
Right. Take it easy, Lewis. We've sent for a doctor.
I didn't see the sign. I didn't know the street didn't go through. Lousy break. Lousy break. I'd have made it if I stayed off the street. You'd never have got me if I stayed off the street. I just turned the car and all of a sudden I was on a dead end.
Afraid you're wrong there, mister.
Huh?
You've been there a long time.
Conrad Austin Lewis and his confederates were apprehended and brought to trial on 11 counts of grand theft auto and one count of kidnapping. They were found guilty and sentenced as prescribed by law. Grand theft auto is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for a period of not less than 1, nor more than 10 years. Kidnapping is punishable by imprisonment for a term of from 1 to 25 years in the state penitentiary.
Dragnet is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet, untuned to yesterday from December 1st, 1953, an NBC episode. We just heard the Armed Forces Radio Service version, which brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.